Why am I here? Quinn thought, sitting in her idling car in the parking lot of the Butternut Motel, in a cold, bluish twilight in late March. Here was the town of Butternut, Minnesota, her home for the first 18 years of her life, and by all accounts an idyllic and lovely place, with quaint shops, small houses, and a beautiful lake surrounded by great northern pines. It was her home, if home was the place you were born and grew up. But for Quinn, it was also the place she'd avoided for the last 10 years. Who was it who wrote, "You can't go home again," she wondered now. Thomas Wolfe, she decided, and for a moment she wasn't in a motel parking lot, but was back in her AP English class in the fall of her senior year. Mrs. McKinley droning on about autobiographical fiction, while the boy at the desk next to Quinn doodled an image from World of Warcraft in the margin of his notebook. No, she thought. Thomas Wolfe was wrong, at least in her case. You could go home again, but maybe you shouldn't go home again. Maybe you should listen to the same voice that a decade earlier had said as you packed your suitcases after graduation, "Leave. Leave now and don't come back." She wanted to put her car in reverse, but she didn't. She wouldn't go. Not yet. She'd do what she'd come here to do. She'd promised herself she wouldn't run this time. She'd stay for the weekend. Probably longer. She turned off the car's ignition, the engine stilled, and the heating vents, which had been piping warm air into the car, went cool. But she didn't get out yet. She cocked her head and looked at the view through the windshield. It wasn't encouraging. The Butternut Motel, a single-story building whose 12 rooms faced the parking lot, had struck Quinn, when she'd last lived in town, as charming and retro, with emerald green paint, bright white trim, and an emerald and white striped canopy that shaded the front office and had Butternut Motel printed on it in a jaunty cursive. Now, well, now the whole thing looked a little worse for wear, though in fairness, that might have been the season. Mounds of tired snow separated the parking lot from the sidewalk that fronted the motel, and the bare shrubs that stood in for landscaping between the rooms shook, disconsolately, in the wind. Saddest of all was the plastic table and chair that stood sentry outside of each room. Who was sitting outdoors when the nights were still below freezing and the days barely edging into the 40s? When the car started to get cold, Quinn got out. She lifted her suitcase from the trunk and wheeled it over to the office, where, through the windows, she could see a woman sitting at a reception counter. As Quinn pushed open the swinging glass door, though, her eyes slid past the woman and settled instead behind her, where, on a table, there was a wire cage with a ferret inside of it. She flinched. She hated ferrets. Her neighbor had raised them when she was growing up, and she'd always found there to be something faintly repulsive about them. "That's Hank Williams," the woman said, turning around to look at the ferret too. "Believe it or not," she went on, "last year one of our guests checked out of their room and left him behind." "I believe it," Quinn said, though she smiled as she said it. The woman smiled back. She was young, early 20s, Quinn guessed, and the general impression she gave was one of paleness. Pale hair, pale eyes, pale skin. Even her lips, when she smiled at Quinn, were pale. "Fortunately for Hank," she confided to Quinn now. "The Hanks for Hank Williams. 'Cause he just goes crazy when he hears country music. The owner, Mr. Tremblay, took a real shine to him. So he put his cage in here, where he'd always have someone to keep him company," she added without a trace of humor. "It's a selling point for some people, I think. Especially when we put his little leash on and let him walk around. You know, let him have the run of the place." She paused. "You don't remember me, do you?" she asked Quinn. "Do we know each other?" Quinn said, realizing that she did indeed look familiar.